How very good and pleasant it is when kindred live together in unity. It is like the precious oil on the head running down upon the beard on the beard of Aaron, running down over the collar of his robes. It is like the dew of Hermon which falls on the mountains of Zion, for there the Lord ordained his blessings, life forevermore. They devoted themselves to the apostles, teaching and fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and upon the prayers all came upon everyone, because many wonders and signs were being done by the apostles. All who believed were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all as any had need. Day by day, as they spent much time together in the temple, they broke bread at home and ate their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having the goodwill of all the people. And day by day, the Lord added to their numbers those who were being saved.
Good morning. Good to see you this morning, and welcome to Glenmar. I want to talk today, this message is about a community. But I came across a book title that's been interesting. I haven't read the book, but I read a couple of reviews on it. The book title is called Alone Together. And it's written by a professor at MIT, and it's talking about how technology has changed the way we relate to one another and the impact that technology has had on our understanding of community and relationships. Think about this. There is a gentleman that spent $335,000 to buy property in a virtual world called Entropia. Think about that. That this person was so involved with this online community and this online fictional world that this man spent $335,000 buying land on a fictional virtual asteroid somewhere in cyberspace to buy land. What does that say about community or relationships or who we're relating to and who we're getting involved with? How many people here have ever emailed your spouse or your kids? Yeah. You know, you live with them, but, you know, we're going to email, right? So, I mean, think about how technology has changed. We didn't have a face-to-face conversation about it. And then how we really go through life, and we, you know, it's a five-minute conversation here, Facebook status here, email there, text there. And then we wonder why we are not developing the kind of relationships that we want in our lives, that we really are wired for in our lives. That we really do have a need for community and face-to-face relationships with people, and yet we're so busy running around and using all these technologies that we're actually not being in community. And so that book title has been haunting me, you know, this book title, Alone Together. You know, we're all together, we're all connected, but we're still feeling loneliness. We're still feeling like we're alone. We're still feeling that void in our lives. I mean, we can go through our lives and I can never interact with my neighbor. You know, I mean, I've got a garage door opener now, then I go in and out of my garage, and I don't need to even go out to a restaurant. I can have food delivered to my house. You know, I don't even have to interact with somebody at the grocery store anymore. I've got self-checkout. You know, I don't even have to talk to anybody when I go to the grocery store. So this limits our human interaction. And so what we end up with is what Scott Peck has called pseudo-community. You know, we're kind of having this false sense of community. We feel, because we feel connected, we really think we're connected, but really are we developing this idea of community? Acts chapter 2, which we heard read this morning, talked about a different type of community, didn't it? It talked about a community that I sense was a really great community that I wanted to be a part of. I'd like to be a part of a community like that. A community that looked out for each other, a community that shared with one another, a community that devoted themselves to one another and to the teachings of God. In fact, they devoted themselves to four things: the apostles' teaching, to fellowship, to the breaking of bread. Everybody likes a good meal, right? And prayer. So, but today I want to talk about just that one word there, that one piece there, and that's that devotion to fellowship. That devotion to being in community with other people. To be devoted to something literally means to persist obstinately in. Are you and I obstinate about our relationships? I'm not talking about obstinate in a bad way. I'm talking about willing to persist in relationship, to be obstinate about staying in relationship and being in relationship with someone in community. They persisted obstinately in being in community with one another. They never gave up on it. They kept working at it. They didn't stop. You know, in a day and age where we change jobs and change Facebook statuses and change houses and change careers, sometimes our relationships become disposable like our razors. We think, you know, if my razor's not working anymore, what do? I throw it away. That sometimes our relationships, if they're not working, we, instead of investing time to work them out or to work on them, sometimes we just cast them aside. That's not community. Community is persisting obstinately in that relationship with that person. There's a couple of things I gleaned from this early community, this Christian community. One is that, did you notice that they were open-hearted and open-handed in their relationships? They were being open-hearted and open-handed. They were willing to share with one another. They were willing to give to one another. They were willing to be in relationship to each other and open-hearted to one another. Today we call that, we use the term hospitality or radical hospitality we've heard about around the church. What does that mean to be radically hospitable? I think that's what they were doing. But what does that mean? Does that mean, is hospitality trying to impress other people? Or is hospitality about being in relationship with other people? I'll give you an example. When somebody comes over to my house, depending on the person that comes, depending on who's coming is a direct relationship to how much the house gets cleaned. Does that make sense? Are you with me here? So if like the mother-in-law is coming over to the house gets a total cleaning, you know? Spick and span, top to bottom. If a good friend is coming over to the house, the magazines just get moved off the chair, right? You see what I'm saying? There's a difference because of what? Because of our relationship to that person. So our hospitality sometimes looks like me trying to impress somebody else rather than me just saying, hey, come in, sit down, let's chat. You know, that's the whole Mary Martha syndrome that we hear about in the Bible. Are we going to sit at Jesus' feet or are we going to go clean in the kitchen? So why am I doing that, though? What's the motivation behind that? Am I trying to impress somebody? That's not really hospitality, is it? I'm trying to impress somebody rather than I'm trying to be in relationship with somebody. So that's important. And I do want to go on record as saying that I'm not the one that cleans the house, so that can't, you know, I'm not taking ownership for that. So they persisted in this. Karen Main says, true hospitality comes before pride. True hospitality comes before pride. And then I found this Proverbs in Proverbs 15:17 says, a bowl of vegetables with someone you love is better than a steak with someone you hate. Isn't that true? You know? What does it really mean to be in community, to be in authentic community? And that's the other thing I glean from this Acts community. I think that they were in authentic community with one another. They were being authentic with one another. And I think we need to be honest here this morning. The church is not always the place that we feel comfortable being authentic, is it? The church is kind of the place we go to. We dress up. We make ourselves look good. We put on our smiles, and we try and be somebody and trying to make others think that we're really great people, that we're, you know, that everything's okay, that really there are no imperfections in my life. There are no quirks in my life, and I can guarantee you there are quirks and imperfections in all our lives. So sometimes we neglect being in community because there's this fear of being authentic with one another, this fear of being real with one another. Literally, this idea in that text that talked about being that they were sincere or generous, but literally the word, if we unpack that word there, it literally says to have simplicity of heart. I like that. I don't know about you, but I like it to have simplicity of heart. I would like to have just simplicity of heart, meaning that my heart is not wrapped up so much in trying to impress other people and trying to cover up my imperfections that, you know, things get complicated. Sometimes in managing our own stuff and trying to manage and tiptoe around other people's stuff, we can actually get very complicated in our relationships, can't we? And our hearts aren't simple. They become very complicated, and we're trying to figure out how to do the dance. I had a gentleman in one of the churches I served who I always felt like I had to dance around. And he was the guy that never liked the hymns that I picked for worship on Sunday morning. We never have a disagreement about music, I'm sure. This is, you know, so that, but that's a typical thing. The other thing, you know, we'd go to a meeting, and no matter what side or position I took on or opinion I had, he was always going to have the other opinion. And no matter what I did, you know, we didn't celebrate the right holidays in the church. I didn't read the scripture right. It was like there was nothing I could do to be right in this guy's eyes. And this has gone on for months. And he always, you know, he was very nice and respectful in public, but, you know, walking down the hallway in the church, he'd kind of like pull you aside and say, you need to change this. Or you need to do this differently. And so, you know, I kind of did the dance of trying to manage him and manage his stuff and tiptoe around him. You know, we use that phrase, you know, you walk on eggshells, you know, that kind of thing when you're around certain people. And so I was walking on eggshells with him, and finally I came into the church for a meeting one night, and he was one of our ushers. And no offense to any of the ushers this morning. One of the ushers said he was coming in, and this was before the days of screens and technology. And that they actually, we had a board in the church that you put the hymn numbers up on. Anybody remember those old churches where, you remember that, right? So he was in, he had his ladder out, and he was looking at the bulletin, and he was looking at the hymns, and he was shaking his head. And he was putting up the numbers, and I'm walking by, and so he thought he'd just let me have it. So he let me know how disappointed he was in me for picking these hymns this particular Sunday, which I had heard before. And, you know, I'm like, the whole hymnal I thought was fair game, but evidently not. But so we're going through this little dance, and so I just ignored it. I just walked on. And I went into my meeting. I sat in my meeting for about 5 minutes, and I said, you know what, I can't sit here. And so I went back out into the worship sanctuary as he was working in there. And I walked up to him, and I said, it's time for me to be authentic. And I just simply said something very authentic to him. I said to him, I realize you don't like me. And you may never like me. And I just want you to know it's okay. I don't need you to like me. I said, but this is what I'm going to do from this point forward. I know that I am going to do my best to try and love you, even though you don't like me. And this man who had been so obstinate and rough around the edges broke down in tears before me. See, he had never said any, nobody, I don't think he rarely ever heard those words, I'm going to try and love you, from somebody else. You see, love is what helps authenticity to happen. Because I was trying to be authentic with him. You know, that actually led us to have a very authentic conversation at that point. And you know what? From that point on, we never really had another problem. Because he knew that it was, see, sometimes it's more important to be in relationship than to be right. And so that changed our relationship at that moment, and we both grew from that experience. But you know, whenever there's friction, there needs to be love. I mean, that's just the bottom line. Can you imagine what would happen if you and I drove our cars without oil in the engine? What would happen to it? It would what? It wouldn't go far, is right. It wouldn't go very far at all. Why? Because these gears are in this engine, and they heat up. There's friction between those gears, and that friction causes them to heat up, and if they overheat, the car breaks down. The same with relationships. Friction is always going to be there. You know, we're always going to have friction in our relationships. We're always going to have friction in our communities. We're always going to have those places of friction. What's needed is oil in that gearbox. Oil is what helps those gears to reduce the friction in those gears. God says, the Bible says, it's love that is the oil in a community that helps the friction to minimize. So that we're called to love each other in community, to be in community, and love actually should create authenticity in relationship. If I know somebody loves me, I'm more likely to be authentic with them. If I think that this other person doesn't love me or won't ever love me, then I'm less likely to be authentic with them, right? But this early Christian community was marked by this ability to be in relationship and be in authentic relationship, to be simple of heart in their relationships. And the other thing I like about this early community is that they seem to enjoy being together. They liked being together. They liked being with each other. They kept meeting together. They kept going to be with each other. They met in the temple. They went in their homes and they met and they had meals together and they met in smaller groups in their homes. And really, you know, that's where real authenticity can happen. I don't think authenticity can happen in this room here, with this many people. But when we get into small groups, when we get into Bible studies, when we get into smaller groups where we can share and bear one another's burdens with each other in life, that becomes an authentic community. And to invest time in those small groups, in those smaller group relationships, is valuable to us all in a world that is just changing status on Facebook. We need to be in face-to-face community and to enjoy it. You know, Psalm 133, we heard read this morning, talks about the blessing of being in that type of community. It's a blessing from God to have that kind of relationship and have that kind of community. That's a blessing from God. And so if you have that in your life today, give God thanks. It's a blessing. If you don't have that type of community in your life, I would encourage you to seek it out. You know, a lot of times I think, you know, we don't have it because we're waiting for somebody else to come to us. You know, I found that out early on. You know, I was always waiting, well, maybe they ought to call me, or maybe they ought to contact me, or maybe they ought to seek me out. But really, sometimes it's us seeking someone else to going and asking that question. But to enjoy one another is a valuable thing in community. I was reflecting actually on a youth program, a youth group that I was a part of, and that really was one of the greatest senses of community I've experienced in life. And because this group met together regularly, met every week, and we met for Bible study regularly. And then we took backpacking trips together, and we learned about God even through the backpacking and the fun things we did. And we went on a mission trip together. We met together. We ate together. We celebrated things, life events together. And this group just continued to grow. Because the other thing about that community was we were always inviting other people into it. It wasn't a closed community. It wasn't saying nobody else is welcome. It was always saying there's always room for one more, is what we would always say. But, and so this community grew, and we always were open to other people. And I remember this retreat that we took one time. We were up in Romney, New Hampshire, in the middle of winter, playing ice hockey and having a good time, and then hearing speakers and being in retreat. And there's a new guy who had come for the first time on this retreat with us. And he had spent Friday night with us, and he spent all day Saturday with us. And then Sunday morning, before the closing worship service, he came up to me, and he says, there's something different about you guys. He says, I don't know what it is. He says, but I want to be a part of it. You see, what he was witnessing was us just being in community. What he was seeing was just us enjoying being together and knowing about God and learning about God and worshiping God together. And that became attractive to him in his life. And he wanted to be a part of that. He's like, you guys like being with each other. I've never seen that before. And he became a part of that group. And as a result of that, he became a part of the community, was invited in the community, and as a result, he also came to know God as a result of that. Because he had come from a family that didn't go to church. But he knew, he sensed something within that community that he wanted to be a part of. So what's stopping us? What's getting in the way of that kind of community for us? What is it that's stopping us from having that kind of community in our lives? Well, let me read to you what they did in Acts chapter 2. For verse 46 says this, day by day, not week by week, not year by year, not month by month, not Facebook update by Facebook update, day by day, as they spent much time together. Not a little bit of time, much time together. You see, if we're really honest, what's getting in the way of us developing real community with other people, it's time. Because relationships require the investment of time, an investment of much time. And so the natural, the challenge for us always is, I can be in relationship with lots of people and give them little bits of time, you know, a text message here, a Facebook status here, an email here, a phone call here, or I can invest, take all that time, add up, and invest it in a few key relationships in my life that I know will reap greater rewards and give me that sense of community. See, we can be in relationship with 100 people, or we can be in relationship with maybe 5, 6, 8, 10, 3, 12 people. But we only have so much time. And we all have the same amount. And the other interesting thing is, none of us know when our account's going to run out. Nobody knows how much time they are going to have. And I did a memorial service this week. Not once did anybody say, boy, I wish I was spending more time at the office. Or boy, I wish I was spending more time online checking my email. Or boy, I wish I was spending more time on that project. The thing I always hear is, I wish I had more time with this person. I wish I had more time for this relationship. That's what it's about. Amen.